system. I remember also I was dating Claudia, and she lived in Mexico. I'm in British Columbia, and I'm flying home from dating her, and get there into my classroom early in the morning and wiping the sleepy dirt from my eyes. And I come to class, and it's a base 12 system. But I taught it two or three times before. It wasn't that difficult to get up and teach it. And the students got it. They actually did. So there's a lot of stuff that can hardly be taught well the first or second time you teach it. Mm-hmm. Chemistry and history. History, oh, the things I learn about history as I live life. And I hear this story and listen to this poem and understand this song. And suddenly, history, I feel it could come alive. Whereas before, it's not. We have a limited time in the classroom, too. So the teacher needs to know how to manage that time well. And a first-year teacher almost has no clue in what is important to emphasize and what isn't important to emphasize. And their words don't count, don't carry as much weight. They don't have that thrust to throw into it. They don't understand what's important. And they may end up sharing more chaff than actual wheat in the classroom. Systems of education take a while to learn. When we went to Romania and it's a CLE system, I had no clue. In that first year, for my students, they wasted some time. Some of my students were studying subjects that did them no good for their diploma that they must earn. But I was just teaching what I was told to teach. And, yeah, we won't get into more details. But some people wasted their time. And it took me a year or two to understand how the CLE system worked and that this student needs to study this now and this next year and that the year after that. When so much is in flux in a community, it depends on how stable your communities are. Someone needs to stay. A teacher needs to stay. Someone needs to stay. A teacher that teaches in one community year after year after year can bring a sense of stability and a sense of direction, I believe, to that community through what they're teaching. Working with people is a learned skill. When should you be merciful? When should you stand your ground? When should you be merciless? These are things I learned a lot through trial and error, but these are things you're not going to learn working with people right away. It takes time and experience. Now, what matters and what doesn't, behavior-wise? I remember one day after school, I saw that one of the boys had gone and kicked the ball up on the school roof, nice flat roof there, and he kicked the ball up there, and I came through the door. I was upset, like, what are you doing kicking this ball on the roof again? As soon as I opened the door, I saw, oh, one of the dads was standing there and saying, put your foot over here, oh, climb over here, yeah, you can reach it if you lean a little further, and was there directing this boy to get the ball back down from the roof. Well, I shut up, and I realized something. It wasn't that big of a deal that this boy kicked the ball up on the roof. I didn't have to get my dander up. We don't know often, right when we start teaching, what actually matters and what doesn't. My parents, if I go to them and say, you're way more lenient on the younger ones than you were on me, they'll say, that's because we figured it out. And that's, I think it's very true. On the first ones, parents are also often super aggressive. Everything matters. And then as they end up toward the end of the family, they start realizing, you know what? This thing I was so worked up about isn't that big of an issue. And maybe they might say, I'm going to focus on this instead. And they kind of change their parenting skills. Teaching is very much the same. Work in a community a long time to know families and to earn their trust. You can't step into a community right away, a new community, and expect the parents to trust you. You're going to have to spend probably 3 or 4 years to actually earn that trust. This is valuable, valuable commodity, valuable goods to have. Teach for many years to build relationships with students outside the classroom. It's so rewarding to have your students finish school, graduate, and then be able to interact with you on that more adult level. It's been very rewarding for me. Classical education, I hope I've heard this a few times already these days, I know, but classical education is mentoring, not lecturing or studying in a book. Classically, people have learned by role modeling, by following. This is how Jesus taught his disciples. He gave them the Sermon on the Mount. He quickly gave them the script, but then he spent 3 years showing them how it's done. How can you show someone how it's done in 1 year of teaching? No, you can be the nicest person in 1 year, and your students will be like, yeah, you're just putting on a front for 1 year. But if they see 2, 3, 4, 5, and you're always patient, you're always there, they'll be like, this guy actually goes the whole way. He actually means it. We cannot actually change lives until we stick with something for a long time. This is a hobby horse I'm obviously on, as you can tell. This goes with missions and other things as well. What will it take? What's it going to take? When I was, after I taught for four years, I believe it was, I went out for a steak with a friend of mine, and we were sitting talking about, and he's like, how much money do you make? I told him, and he's like, ah, oh, and he had a fit, and he's like, you know, you've been teaching for 4 years, and you're making what you could have made in this business in the first year. And yeah, it was true. And I went into a school board meeting, and I told the school board about a problem I had. And I had a great plan. I said, what if we would, anyway, it doesn't really matter what the plan is, not interesting, trust me. So I had a great plan. They took my idea, and they batted it back and forth. They act like it was kind of a stupid thing they heard. And they batted it back and forth, and then finally at the end, I'm like, what? Finally, at the end, they said, well, is it okay if Kyle does what he wants to do here? Like, yeah, yeah, the all voters are okay. I was like, what's this about? Like, you're just, I felt so criticized, so pointed at. And I went home that night, and there was going to be a lunar eclipse that very night. And I went, and I put my head on the pillow, and we had been talking in school about the lunar eclipse. Were we going to wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock to see the lunar eclipse or not? And I told my students, yeah, I'm going to wake up for it. I was so ticked. I went home and laid in bed and I turned off my alarm. I'm like, I'm just going to sleep. And probably that's what I needed more than anything else. Partway through the night, the Spirit came and spoke to me. And I remembered the students. I thought, this isn't about the school board. This isn't about this other stuff. This is about them. And I set my alarm and I got up in the night and I looked at the moon just enough to tell them I did. And went to school the next day and said, did you see the solar eclipse, the lunar eclipse? Are you excited about this? And they were happy about it. We had good times. But through this experience then, I put this kind of into a story. And I sent it to Johnny Erb. And I said, what should I do? I said, I am so frustrated at my wit's end. Should I call it quits? Is this the way life is actually going to be? And Jonathan replied, bless his heart. And again, that's what stuck me back in. That's why I stuck it out. And so I'm actually going to read you from his letter that he sent to me 7 years ago, different times throughout this talk, and kind of use it as a bit of a basis of how to be a career teacher, how to make it work. I'm hoping for questions at the end. Please tuck them away, or if they're too desperate, stick your hand up. But I'm going to go a mile a minute because there's a lot of stuff I want to cover. What do we need? What's it going to take? It's going to take a sense of a call. A sense of a call, somehow feeling like this is your place in the kingdom of God. And this will be the basis of your faith and your commitment later on. You can say, you know, God called me, and He is faithful who has promised. He is faithful who has called you. He's going to make it actually happen in your life. Now, do you get a call to teach in your first or second year of teaching? Maybe not. You might just fill in for a while. Just because you've taught for 1 or 2 years and you don't really feel called to it isn't necessarily a reason to throw in the towel. But hopefully you'll get a call at some point, kind of a realization that this makes me happy. This is my happy place. I can do this. And I've tried a few other things, and nothing's like teaching. It turns my crank. If it turns your crank, stay there with it. Number two, we're going to need good friends. Find a mentor. I sent this email to Jonathan. This is what he sent back. Dear Kyle, I understand. Been there, done that. Those are good words to read at the beginning of an email. You offered that I take my time, but if I don't reply today, it will be a long time because I can hardly do this kind of thing during the week. And the subjects you brought up are so native to the work of a teacher that I've already spent a decade and a half thinking about this stuff. There you go. That's a good mentor. Find someone you can sit down with. Leroy Weems is here, and he was my school board chairman for those first 4 years. And I spent hours in his house till 11 o'clock at night. And now young people come to my house and do the same thing. And I went to him already, and I apologized and said, I'm sorry for keeping you and your family up so long. And he's very nice about it. But find someone in your community, hopefully even in your home community, you can at least get close to and pour your heart out to, especially if you're teaching away from home. Or find a mentor. Reach out for help. If you're going to last for a long time, you're going to need someone, I think, to bounce ideas off of. Have commitment. Relationships get rocky as you last in a community. It isn't like, oh, once I get to know these people, they'll like me. No. Usually when they get to know you, they don't like you. And you need to work on this constantly to make it work. And especially with teaching. Something happens here. Relationships get rocky with your school board, especially because pretty soon you'll have more knowledge about your trade than they do. And that's a bad spot. Because then there's all kinds of conflicts. And this is what Jonathan thought was happening here. This is what he said. What is happening is several things likely. One, you're maturing in your teaching ability. Two, the school board is acting like the majority of school boards behave. And three, at your stage in teaching, improper relationships with a board can wreck a teacher. That's exactly right. You got to have a relationship with your board. You got to figure out how to work it out. How do you work it out? I don't know if I'm going to cover this later in the notes, so I'm going to go ahead and talk about it right now. This is what Jonathan told me, a story here, and I heard him, if you hear him say battle axe, you know what he's talking about. A story someone told him once, that a little boy locked himself in the bathroom, and the mom called the fire company. The fire company came out, took the axe, chopped down the door, rescued the boy from the bathroom. The dad comes home and says, "What's with the door? The door's all chopped up. What on earth is going on here?" And called up the fire company, and they said, "Well, we're the fire company. That's what we do." He should have called a locksmith. He should have called the right person in to solve the problem. If you call the board in for your problems, expect a battle axe. That's what they're going to do. And there is a lot of value in this. Now, please hear me with a mature mind, and I don't know how many board members I have sitting here, but I just heard Jonathan giving another lady this advice again today. Be very careful what questions you ask your board. Don't go ask them for questions when you already know the answer. You already know what you want to do, because they're going to say something else, and then you're going to be upset. School boards are not the people on the ground actually doing it. So as much as possible, go ahead and handle your problems yourself. Your problems with your students. Anything that has to do with your actual teaching. Now, if it has to do with the money coming in for your school, or if it has to do with maybe school policy, such as students must arrive no later than a certain hour, that's school board business. But as far as what you do in your classroom, hey, I'm going to let you skip the odds in math. That's what my little thing was. If you get above a 95%, I'm going to let you skip the odds of the review in the next math lesson. That's a question you can make as a teacher. Don't go running to the board. Don't act like you'll feel stupid by the time they're done talking about it. And so understand how to work with your board. Respect them, but don't just go to them with questions you know the answer to. And a good idea is to, as Jonathan suggested actually, and this is like dirty little talk we're having here behind the board's back, but throw them some red meat once in a while. If you have a question and you're like, "You know, should we go on school hike or Tuesday or Thursday?" It doesn't really matter to me. Ask them, you know, "Should we go to school hike Tuesday or Thursday?" They'll feel important. They'll make the decision. They'll feel used. Learn to relate to them in this kind of a way. Now, just stop me if I'm sinning, but I don't think I am. Understand. But it is extremely important for you to have a relationship with them. And it's extremely important for you. Here's the disclaimer. Here's the stopping point. Never, ever do something that they're going to be able to, that you know they're not going to have your back. Like, never make a call where you know that if the parent comes to you, the board's not going to have your back. That's a terrible place to be. That's suicide. It's not going to work. Commitment to relationships, board relationships. Oh, here we go. And this is Jonathan again. When a person begins teaching, they're in such a fantasy survival mode that they regard any and all help as welcome and good. They have little of their own resources to bring to bear on the challenges they are facing. Most teachers never get out of this stage very far because they quit before you did, the average teacher tenure being 3.3 years in our circles. It follows then that the challenges that come after you begin to develop some confidence and resources for yourself for how a problem should be addressed. So then it becomes a problem because now you actually have your own ideas about how to address a problem. So you need to understand what problems go to the board and what problems don't. I am in a mission or church plant, whatever you want to call it. I call it a church plant. I prefer that term. In Romania, if we have a problem there in Romania, we could call up our mission board and say, "Hey, we've got a problem." They're going to say, "We've got a solution." And most of the time, the solution might not be something that would actually work on the ground. Mm-hmm. So be careful. This goes for many areas of life. Be careful what problems you convey back to your authorities. But definitely hold them as your authorities and be thankful for them. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't really have a school board right now in my school, and it's a defunct thing. It's dysfunctional this way. We're kind of trying to create one, but it's kind of hard. Number five, embrace poverty. I asked several people, I said, what's the career teachers? Give me two things or three things. And everyone's, well, the money. And this is what we could talk about the rest of the time, because this is probably the biggest challenge you're going to face. You're going to see your friends move on in life, and you're going to see them making lots of money, getting married and having children, being very successful, and you're going to be sitting there in the dumps. You're going to be sitting there just behind. And this isn't the problem. The problem will only compound the longer you stay in it. Because after a while, 20 years from now, you're not going to have any more money than you have right now. All your friends are going to have another 20 years worth of salary or whatever they're doing with their lives tacked on. And the difference is even going to be greater. And 20 years from now, you decide to quit your job. What jobs are available for you? Digging ditches, stupid stuff. You have not been in a company for 20 years working your way to the top. You're going to have to start again at the bottom 20 years from now. This is a terrible, terrible thing. And in fact, when I asked Ivan Martin, I said, career teachers, he said, I would never recommend it. Yeah, for this reason. It's almost a thing you might need to take to God time after time. And I don't think you can realize the consequences of this. I don't realize the consequences of it. And then if you think teaching is bad, try to go to the mission field. Try to go to another country where you're paid just a stipend that you can survive on. And I had a hard conversation with my mission board a year ago, and I said, what's going to happen when I'm 50 years old? And I've spent my entire life here in this country, living month by month, just enough to pay the bills, maybe $100 to put away a month, even less. What's going to happen to me? Are you guys going to have my back? And they said, we'll have your back. Praise God. And they better would. If they don't, someone else does. And that's really all that matters. We don't need to be the rich people in our communities. And secondly, you can manage the resources you have. Do manage the resources you have. I know of a teacher that was in a wheelchair for years. And so he was teaching school. And one time in his community, the story is told, a boy needed some money. And so he went to the deacon, and he's like, I need to borrow some money. Like, do you know anyone in the church that would have some money to borrow? And the deacon said, go talk to the school teacher. I think he's got some money for you. Boy, that was a wise deacon, but also a wise teacher. This boy kind of been wasting his money. And to discover that this teacher that's struggling, I think he had polio or something at some point in his life, he's been in a wheelchair some of his life, actually had money laid up that he could loan out to this other guy. So it's possible to make do on just a little tiny bit of money. Here's Johnny Erb again. Comparing yourself to your peers regarding finances is really discouraging. Our situation is between us and the Lord, and that's about it. We have been poor, he's speaking for himself, we have been poor as church mice throughout the years compared to our peers, but we've been filthy rich in other important areas. Money is a poor way to keep score. If you're thinking about getting married, your wife will also have to share the vision, or else you'll need to stuff the vision or stuff the girlfriend. Amen. So be careful about the people you hang out with. This is probably a safe place. And I'm like Bible school soon. Yeah, think about it and think hard about it. But you can find ways, and there are blessings. I wish Jonah could just, maybe we'll have time, or ask him sometime for his testimony about the things, ways God's provided for his material needs. And I remember him telling me stories that will make you cry. And Verlin Miller, same deal. These old guys that stuck it out when God was hardly giving them dollars and cents. But the blessings and the way God cares for his own. He really does. And there are a lot of women out there that will support you doing this. I really think there are, and I found an amazing one. So you can too. It's not just has to be a man's vision or one person's vision. This can be a bigger thing than this. Anyway, I think I'll let that for now. Don't look for results as a teacher. We live in a results-oriented, number-crunching society. And teaching school does not yield those kind of results, and not right away. And you're going to have students, that walk away from God at some point in your life. And if I would start counting up on my fingers the number of students that I have that are now hardly serving God, it's way more than I wish it was. I don't know what to do about this. But take that chance you have in the classroom to put everything you can into those students and make sure that if they do choose that path, they can never point back and say, "You were the problem. You were the problem." And I believe before God that my students would not say that. Do what you can with what you have, but your students are people and they're going to make their own choices and you're not their dad or their church or anything else. And they might choose other ways. Don't let those results weigh you down too much. Cast your bread on the waters. Some are going to take it, some aren't. Make sure it's good bread and make sure you're casting it wisely. And don't look for results almost in any other kind of way. Just teach. Just let yourself go. Let the years roll by and the results will come in. I hear roundabout sometimes from my students and it doesn't take very many compliments and it was worth it all. It really was worth it all. A few pitfalls to cover. What happens to career teachers? What can destroy your career? Laziness. My fingers are all pointing in. Don't become a lazy teacher. After you've taught for years and years, and you can teach this algebra lesson, you can just jump up and teach it. Don't fall back on that as your crutch. And don't just start doing everything else and not putting that time into school to be fresh every morning, to understand that lesson. Just because you don't need to prepare doesn't mean you should stop preparing. There's always more you can learn, more stories, more things. I think laziness is a big problem can be a big problem with career teachers. Pride. You're never going to be proud of your money. But there's a lot of other kinds of pride. Yeah. And I think I've seen teachers that this happens to. And I think, I can't explain all the reasons why, but teachers are often a little more charismatic, probably a little more involved in people's lives, a little more pouring out of themselves. And that action tends to make people like them and can even make authority fall on them because of their interaction with authority. I think authority and like power, I don't know how do we say this, kind of starts to flow towards someone who teaches well over time. And it can destroy people very, very quickly and make them to where you can't relate to them, you can't tell them anything new, you can hardly deal with them. I don't know how to say this. I mean, I don't know how to, what is the solution? And I loved how Johnny Dyke was down there saying that God will mess you up. He'll pull you down if you're proud. Amen, he will. But we need to really, really let it happen. If you're a teacher and you've taught for 5, 6, 7 years and you're in a discussion and someone's talking about something and you know the answer, just shut up. It's okay. You don't need to just say what you think. You don't need to be the guy that always has the answers. Let someone else go ahead and speak a little bit. You know, true wisdom is never prideful. True knowledge and true wisdom will never be sticking its words in there all the time. I regard as some of my heroes, some of the smartest people I know are some of the quietest people I know. I talked to Johnny Erb this time and said, "Look, you're hardly up front anymore." I mean, 10 years ago, he was the guy. He's hardly seen. And there's young squirts like me doing this kind of stuff. That's good. Not me, the good thing, but it's good that it blesses me that he has the wisdom to say, you know, here's the torch, we're passing it on, and to step back. And yet he comes and sits into these classes. We put Jonah here. And the wisdom in these guys, and when they're in your class and spouting forth, it's like not only do they do they have tons of knowledge, and are they pretty quiet about it? But they don't just stay home. They still come and get involved in it. They could easily stay home. But no, they care enough that they're there. And Jonah, God bless you for your sharing. I praise God that you're not like Jonathan. He makes us all different. And it makes an amazing thing.
But it's the caring that keeps down when I was coming back.
The caring.
That's what's got us here.
It's a true teacher.
Yes.
A true heart. Now my thought has left me, but that's okay. It might be better. I think I was going to go on with this. I don't know how many of you know people like, I'm just going to throw some names out, some of my personal heroes, Melvin Lehman, John D. Martin. I don't know if these are ringing any bells in your heads. These are, I don't want to worship people here, and I almost want to turn off the recording, but these are some people that I really respect and admire in my life. Like, honestly, if I would look at some men that I want to be like, these would be some of the, probably within the five, for sure. Those would be two of the names. If you know either of those men, are they men who talk a lot? Well, when you ask them to, they'll talk. But are they men that are always out there saying, go this way, we got to go over here. Fix this, fix this, fix this, fix the other problem. I see the situation, I understand it. You got to get in line, you got to get in line. No, they're sitting there, and they're just watching from the back. And they know where they want to go. But they're not just herding everyone in that direction. To me, this is wisdom. They're putting their words in where they belong, helping it in a slow way. I feel like I'm hardly explaining it well enough, but maybe you can get the idea of what I'm trying to talk about. Just the ability to teach and to lead doesn't mean that you're the guy, the man for the hour, the savior of the situation. No. God needs those quiet people in the back. Those are, I believe, the real people who make the kingdom come. Feeling too responsible for everything. This is kind of ties into it too. But teachers can feel too responsible. And maybe this also could tie back with the idea of being able to let your students, being able to deal without results. But you can sometimes feel so responsible for this happened or this happened, this other thing happened, and it's not really your fault. What are a few rewards? Peace in your heart, deep, deep peace in your heart, because you're doing the thing God called you for. You're fitting that place in the kingdom that He opened up, and He knew you were coming along, and you fit in there. Jonathan said this, be careful, very cautious about concluding your teaching efforts. As I know you in your heart, you have a place for students in your heart and a call from God to teach and a burden for it. It is nasty business to be under the call and burden of God and without students for which to care and teach. I know. I attempted quitting twice and it didn't work. Even God at times has wished that He would have never started a project. It is then that we must be motivated by our calling, our values, and our personal character rather than the poor behavior of those around us who are making our life hard. Be very cautious about just throwing in the towel and saying, I'm done teaching. I really can't survive on $1,000 a month any longer. I'm done. And just throwing it in. See if you can keep going. Now, if you're burnt out, if you're just totally exhausted, you're not sleeping at night, and you've got emotional things starting to happen to you, take a break. Step away from it. That doesn't mean you're done with it. But be careful about stopping because you might lose that peace in your heart. You might flounder along as a very bad electrician for the rest of your life. And it'd be a lot better if you just stayed where you were in the classroom. God doesn't call you to some things like He calls other people to. God told me clearly, I feel like, back in, and here we're circling back to money again, because money is the thing here, I think, probably the thing. And I just found out earlier about how much some schools are paying their students when they start out, and I want to cry. This is horrible. You need to be paid what you're worth, and you're worth a lot more than that. You're worth as much as anyone else in your community is making, but your community will never understand that, and you're going to have to be okay with that. I mean, now I made a sweeping statement. I don't think they'll understand that, and you're going to have to be okay with that. Teaching is like writing and some other things. It's way underpaid in our world. But the problem is the people who get bit by the bug cannot quit. It's an addiction. I will teach as long as you give me a little bit to eat. I'll keep on teaching. And if my brain is almost broke, I'll still teach because I need it. It's my survival. And this may be true of you too. And so these kind of people begin to be taken advantage of almost in the community. Yeah, no one knows maybe how much you're struggling, how much you're hardly making ends meet. And probably no one ever will. But you got to teach because it's the place for you. And God bless you. Like, God bless you. We should say it a few more times. It is worth it. The work isn't always rewarding, but the peace is the only way to live. And doing the thing God called you for, and the rewards can come later. God can sort out the rest of it. When I was just started teaching, started reading my journal, and I'm starting to put things on the chronological scale where they belong. But 2011, it was my first year of teaching. I was just in the community for a little bit, and looking for art supplies for the school, and a lady was in her car in front of me making a left-hand turn in the travel lane, and I rear-ended her. Pulled the pieces right on my car, got out, and she's crying, and she gave me a big hug, and she said, well, tell your dad that you've got to come to town if you're going to see the girls, and everything is fine. And I drove my car home, she drove her car home, and her car was totaled. That bill was $6,700, and then about a year later, I got served papers, and she was suing me for $150,000 or something. Ended up having to pay $80,000 in lawsuit, and I'm 21. I'm being paid $1,000 a month. I'm not married. None of my life is working out. You know, it's a bad place to be. You've probably been there. Thank God for a church that paid so much of my bills for me. But still, that wiped out, my little portion of that wiped out anything I ever had saved up. And I realized then that but what I feel like God was calling me is He's saying, Kyle, there's some things I don't want you to worry about anymore. Money. Just quit it. Quit trying to figure out how you're going to get ahead. Quit trying to figure these things out. Let me take care of them. You get in and you teach well, and you do what you're called to do. The rest of this will take care of itself. I must confess I've forgotten a few times since then. And again, I'll try to get into some kind of venture and nothing works. And God just has to keep saying, Kyle, forget it. I'm a slow learner. But it's rewarding in so many other ways. And if you can learn to just let that one go, you're going to survive well. See God supply your needs as a teacher is just an amazing thing. I wish I had some of the stories that some of the others of you have of Verlin. As I remember him telling the story, one of the schools he taught at, he calculated how much the people spent on bats and gloves just for the school picnic at the end of the year, and he discovered that he had been paid less the whole year than he figured those youth had spent on their bats and gloves for the school picnic. And he talks about one morning eating his oatmeal and just praying to God, peanut butter. Just peanut butter. He gets to school that morning and the student comes running up to his desk and said, Mom sent something for you. It's in the fridge back there. And he opened up the fridge and it's peanut butter. If the only thing you need is peanut butter, God can get it for you. He really can. And He'll take care of these needs. I wish I had more miracle stories like that. I could talk about these things. And probably I do. I'm just forgetting them, like we all do. And we get discontent again. Rewards, the ability to work closely with souls. It's so rewarding to work with children and young people. Have students that you see grow and mature. Have students that will end up coming to you and sharing things with you that they didn't share with a lot of people. Being there for someone. My first year teaching in Romania, I went to this one girl, and I was told, if you go into a new school, always have them. Someone kindly did this the very first year I taught. She wrote up a nice paper about description of every student, their name and her perception of them. It's very informative. Don't take it as the gospel, because it's not. But take it will definitely give you an idea about what's going on here and what went on the years before. My first year over there, I had kind of been told this one girl, learning is hard for her. She'll never really get it. There's not really hope for her. Everything's... And we had one day of school, I think, and I saw, yeah, it was going to be not good at all. And so I took her off to the side and sat her down and said, look, I believe in you, that you can do this. It's going to be hard, and it's going to take a lot of work from you, but I'm going to do every bit I can to slow down, to bring you along, and together we're going to do this. My co-teachers, in the next couple of years, they said, what happened to this girl? Like, she took off. She ended up doing just fine. Yes, she never was an A student, but at least she was a B. It came so much closer. But being able to see that these people are souls, they're people that are with feelings and emotions and messed up home lives and things like that, and being able to get in there and work with that and allow God to use you, hopefully, and then see results from that are going to bless this person years and years down the road. And the ability to work with a maker and redeemer of all things, with God. Just, you get it to work with God. It's next to farming, you know. Farming, you get to work with God. Pays a little better, some ways. But it's a blessing. And then relationships that live outside the classroom, those relationships for years later. You don't know what student's going to come to you in 5 years from now and say this. I had a student, I taught for 1 year, and then I wasn't going to tell this story, but here I am. Oh, yeah, I taught him for 1 year, and then several years later he graduated, and someone met me and they said, you know, in his graduation speech he said you were the best teacher he ever had. I only taught him for 1 year, for one thing. Like, that's a pretty... I can't really claim this as glory for anything. But years later, in fact, in his graduation speech, he remembered me. I've forgotten him a long time ago. People will remember what you do, and it'll bear fruit. Now, that ended it, actually. That's all I have, and we have... No, we don't. What are some more thoughts you have?
I would just suggest you've spoken quite well to the man in the room. Could you speak to the sister too? I know you're not one, but do that. Because I have a heart for them. Joe,
what can we say to the sisters in the room? That should be repeated maybe for the recording anyway. So this was really guy-oriented, and I understand, and I'm sorry, first of all. Ladies, well, no, but this is doobie. this is a problem, an age-old problem. Yes?
I think it was applicable to both sides, because our ladies today who are not teaching school are making gobs and gobs of money compared to the ones who are.
Yes, and that's...
You talk a lot about money, and that is...
Okay, so, yeah, but let me take this a step further. If there's a girl that's taught for 8 years in a school board meeting, and there's a guy that's taught for 2, and there's a problem in the room, who's the school board going to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to listen to the guy. Now, I'm not a feminist by any stretch of your mind. Do not get me wrong. But women serve such a quiet and forgotten role. And, yeah. Talk to my wife about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, but she's done amazingly. But you're going to have to deal with that somehow. And you're going to have to be okay with it. Don't be discouraged. Your work is amazing. Here's the other thing, like I mentioned right away, that about starting wages are just horrible. Again, there's this huge disparity between guys and girls when they start school. And the girls are just not being paid enough. It drives me crazy.
I would like to interject something for me. And that's just, ladies, men can be very dense. If you are running out of money, if you are sick of living with another family, and you would just like to have your own little cottage, don't beat around the bush. Just come out and tell the school board in words of one syllable exactly what you need to survive. And chances are they will happily provide it for you.
Amen. Thank you. Because there's the other thing. Ask for housing if you're girls. I'm just going to hammer on it again. I know my cousin Rowena there. They've been very kind to you there in your school. And I think other schools will follow in the same thing. I believe that when a... See, here's the thing. If you're a single guy... No, let's not talk about... If you are 25 years old and you're a single and you come to stay in someone's house, they'll throw you in a bedroom with someone else. But if you're 25 and you're married, you get to have your own bedroom with whoever you're married to. And we say, well, duh, because you're married. Well, no, not duh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 25-year-old who isn't married needs their privacy and needs their space as much as the married person does. And we do not get this in Anabaptist circles. We just don't get it. And it's time for us to start getting it. So don't be afraid to say, look, I really need my own space. I would love to continue doing this. I like the community. I like the kids. I'm okay with what you're paying me. But can you give me my own place? I know of a girl who went to teach in another country, and after she taught there for a few years, she came home with less money than she went with, basically. I know of another situation where a girl went to teach in another country, and okay, I'll just say it. I gave my co-teacher $50 a month last winter of my own money because of this. So guys, okay, don't start trying to buy your co-teachers, but you know, look out for these things in your communities. If this is what you can do. If you have bread and clothes and a dry place, look out for someone else. Is there more? Thank you for that. That's very important. And my apologies, ladies. I just did again what we all do.
Just one other thing I've been battling with, and that's understanding my limitations as a person and being able to relate to my family. Because, like you said, teachers get asked to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
We get asked to speak at teachers' meetings and things like that. There are limits to our effectiveness, even if it's a good
thing. Yeah, and I realize there's a lot of things I missed in here. Like, my list is not nearly...
I think it goes along with your thing about pride. We have to be humble enough to say, that's too much.
Mm-hmm. But there's a whole side of time management, too, that we totally did not talk about. Like, as you teach for a longer time, you're going to get older, you're going to get more responsibilities, most likely. How are you going to make them fit into the teaching and still be able to teach? Or are they going to finally, I'm going to have to go do something else because I have to be able to work a 9-to-5 and make X amount so that I can be with my family on the weekends? Other comments?
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about the blessing tonight for us as probably men teachers with the older grades. It always blows my mind and brings me to tears every time a student comes in. Maybe it's a troubled student. I said, hey, I became a Christian last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that is a blessing that a teacher can tuck away and...
Yeah. Thank you. Blessing your students coming to God.